Again to BadQuaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone. Today is Wednesday, May 23rd, 2012. And I should start right off with a disclaimer. We have the utility people are all around in the neighborhood marking, you know, marking all the different utilities with spray paint, walking around with their little meters, figuring out where all the lines are. So at any moment, we may be interrupted with dog barking, or if you can hear, I don't know if the mic's picking it up in the background. They're out sawing the pavement again and doing continual work in the neighborhood. And if I can get to it today, that's one of the topics I want to talk about, is the wasting of public money or tax money or stolen money or however you want to look at it. The wasting of tax money for the purpose of boosting the economy. It's really a rather ridiculous idea, but it's almost universally believed among people who are in control of the government currently. So if we have interruption of dogs barking or interruptions of, you know, massive saws grinding away at the pavement in front of the house or whatever, I apologize. I don't have a soundproof office to record in. And actually, right now, what I have is the opposite. I actually have my window open, and it's nice outside, and the air conditioner is off, and I'm taking advantage of a nice morning, one of the few nice Ohio mornings that we get these in the spring and fall here. So we may also get interrupted by a lot of bird noises, and when they notice me beside the window, they have a tendency to come around and make a lot of noise until I throw food out for them. See what I mean? So it appears we're going to have dog barking in the background one way or the other. Sorry about that. Before I get on to the main topic, let me give a little side rant here. You know, one of the things about having we don't have a free market. We have a highly distorted fascist market that we have to deal with. The government's influence is in the market in almost every way. But in any kind of a market situation, you have competition, you have varying companies attempting to do the same thing, same services and same products at you know, competing prices and so forth. Well, it just so happens that I purchased several hundred rounds of ammunition from a really good online source. Now, they're not like sponsors or anything like that, so I'm not getting any kind of kickback for endorsing them. But the company is called BulkAmmo.com, and they do really good. I've ordered from them on different occasions, and I've never had a problem with them whatsoever. I ordered recently, and they shipped using Federal Express. And so I track the shipment as it moves, because the last thing I want is boxes of ammo sitting out in the rain or, you know, whatever, or just sitting in front of my house with, unfortunately, they ship them in boxes labeled ammunition. So I really just didn't want boxes of ammunition sitting in front of my house labeled ammunition, you know, for maybe hours at a time with me not noticing it. So I keep an eye on the tracking number, and I keep an eye on the progress. And yesterday evening, I was expecting the delivery sometime yesterday. So yesterday evening, I was out in front of the house pretty much the whole evening doing different things. And I decided, well, you know, it's like 5:45 in the afternoon or whatever, and I'll just go in and check the tracking number to see where FedEx says that the package is. So I popped on the computer, and it says that the package was delivered to my door at 5:08 p.m. The problem is I was in front of my house lighting a grill at 5:08. No, there was no FedEx truck. There was no delivery. The FedEx people say the delivery was to my door. Well, my front door was open, And there was a dog right there that you're probably going to hear over and over in this podcast. There was a dog that stays at that front door and lives for the opportunity to make all kinds of noise if anyone gets near that front door. Plus, I was right there in front of the house. He would have had to have walked right past me to get to the front door. So I get a hold of FedEx, and trying to get through their automated system is, oh man, it's like pulling wisdom teeth with those little kid tweezers that they use in that game Operation. It's just, it's very frustrating. So I finally get to talk to a human at FedEx, and they take all my information, and I tell them, you know, we're talking about a shipment of ammunition here, and I would prefer it just not be randomly left at some house, especially with my name attached to it. So the person, the customer service person is very attentive, and they're very polite, and they say all the right words, and they take all the right information, and they assure me that they will call me back in 2 hours or less with a status on the package and with a result of what they're going to do to fix the problem. So 3 hours goes by, no contact at all from FedEx. As a matter of fact, now it's the day after. Today's Wednesday. This happened Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday evening, and they still haven't called me. Later that evening, close to 9 o'clock, around about there, this lady rings my doorbell, and she's holding several hundred rounds of ammunition in a couple of boxes, and she says this was delivered down the street to a house that has been empty for over a year. And she manages the property and stopped by to check on it. And there's boxes of ammo in front of the front door of an empty house. Way to go, FedEx. Seriously, way to go. Brilliant. And, you know, how is that anarcho-capitalist, or how is that libertarian, or how is that? Well, you know, incompetence is sort of an aspect of humanity. And it's somewhat built into us as a species. So we're going to have incompetence no matter what. So you can't take something like that and say, well, it's the market's fault, or it's the government's fault, or it's this fault, or it's that fault. You know, people make mistakes. And if you want to blame it on something, you could say, well, it's a massive corporate structure, and there's really no ownership for the individual employee. And the employee, you know, he's going to say, I delivered it to the right house. And what's the proof against him? You know, eventually I got the package. So all he has to do is say, yeah, the guy's lying. I delivered it to the right house. So when you have a large corporation, there's no individual ownership. There's no individual motive for things like this. Okay, so that's not my topic for today. I just wanted to get that out that, you know, I can't really say I've had a lot of positive experiences with FedEx. I generally have better luck with UPS, and at least on a friendly level, the UPS guy waves to me when he goes by. Whenever he stops to deliver something, he always takes a moment and chit-chats, and he's just way friendlier, and I've never had a problem calling and getting a hold of UPS people. And that FedEx automated thing, it would have been better if it was animated. I'd prefer talking to Daffy Duck than their stupid machine. But anyway, okay. So you didn't download this podcast so you could hear me rant about FedEx. So let's get into the meat and potatoes here. And I was actually going to hold this topic to the end of the podcast, and then I thought, you know what? If I start on this, I'm not sure I'll ever get to anything else on the podcast other than this topic. So I figured I'd better start with this topic, and maybe I'll have time to talk about something else. The real thing I wanted to talk about today is I wanted to go over Mises's story of the Master Builder. And I actually hope I will get to that, because I really have a lot to say about that. And Mises, sometimes Mises was able to say things in really, really simple terms that are just super profound, and they apply to so much in life. And the story of the Master Builder is one of those things, so I really want to try to get to that. But before I do, I want to talk a little bit about liberal and conservative reactions to political statements, and how easily people are fooled, how easily people are willingly fooled by politicians so that they can feel comforted. And that's really what it's about. They want a pacifier. They want to feel comforted. They really don't want to know if their politician's really doing those things they say. They just want to feel good so that they don't have to think about it. So Obama comes out and he makes some shallow remarks about gay marriage and supporting the gay community and things like this. And people on the left just fall all over themselves in praise of Obama over this. It's like he's proclaimed, some type of emancipation for gay people, and all of a sudden their lives are going to be perfect, and everybody's going to treat them as equals, and nobody's going to be beating them up anymore, and they're going to be allowed to have any kind of union that they want, if they want marriage or if they want some type of other legal union, or if, you know, it's like if that's what took place. But in fact, what actually took place is a politician spewed out some empty words that he has no intention of standing behind. And he did it only for the purpose of pacifying a fairly influential segment of the liberal voting population. That's all he did. It's just empty rhetoric. It has absolutely no meaning. He will take no real solid actions to support any of his words. Now, when liberals hear this, though, they just fall all over themselves. They're just so happy. They just roll around on the ground and giggle. They're so happy. But when conservatives hear this same rhetoric coming from Obama, they grind their teeth and they clench their fists and they pound their tables and desks and they say, "Oh, this is ruining America, this evil Obama." And they don't see what the liberals are also not seeing, that he's not doing squat. He's not going to do anything. It's all empty rhetoric for the purpose of an election year. That's all it is. It's just words. It has no meaning. He doesn't believe what he's saying. He doesn't care about what he's saying. He's not going to implement anything that he says. He wants everything to remain exactly like they are, unless there is an outcry so big from either side that something absolutely has to be done, and then they'll just put a little bit of a band-aid of a fix on it, lean in a particular direction to try to make it appear as though they're doing something, but they still won't do anything. And that's not to take either side of the gay marriage issue. That I'm not, you know, backing either side and saying that. What I'm telling you is, when a politician like Obama comes out in the public during an election year, coming right up to the election in the months prior to the election, and he makes a statement that panders to one of the hardline sides of his voting bloc, there is absolutely no reason to believe it's anything other than a blatant lie. It's just pandering. That's all it is. The Republicans and the conservatives and the religious right and all these people, you don't have to worry. Obama's not going to do anything about gay marriage. And people on the left, liberals, the gay rights people, all you people, open your eyes. Obama is not your friend. He's doing nothing for you. He will do nothing for you. He simply panders to you because he knows he owns you, and you're going to vote for him no matter what he does. As long as he throws you an occasional phrase or two that kind of sounds like he's in your court, you'll vote for him no matter what, because your eyes are willingly closed. Now, that's the hard truth. And many of the people hearing my voice know this to be the facts. But let me tell you something about his opponent. Let me tell you something about Romney. When Romney says he's going to cut the growth of government, he's doing the same exact thing. When Romney panders to the right, or when he panders to the conservatives, or when he says magic words that make Republicans feel all warm and fuzzy inside, he's doing the exact same thing that Obama is doing with the gay rights issue. That is all he's doing. He is pandering to one aspect of his Republican voting bloc so that he can stimulate those people to get up off their butts and go out and vote in the election And that's all he's doing. He will not change anything. He is not going to move the government to the right or towards conservatism or do any of the things to cut the growth of government. He's not going to do any of those things because Romney is exactly like Obama. He is a blatant liar. He always has been. He always will be. He doesn't care about the issues that he talks about. And anyone with open eyes should be able to see that. But the open eyes is the key. If you're taken in by somebody like Obama or Romney, your eyes are intentionally closed and you don't want to hear the truth. Now, let me ask you something. Do you like Ron Paul? Hold on a minute. Before we get to that, let me point out one other thing. Libertarians believe they fall into a wide description when it comes to the issue of abortion. There are libertarians who are very, very strongly pro-life, and there are libertarians that are very, very strongly pro-choice, and there are libertarians in every aspect of the spectrum between those two. And I'm going to name drop here. I don't agree with everything Walter Block says and does. I think there's some I think Walter Block is not always honest about what he believes, and I think he repeats rhetoric sometimes for the purpose of, sometimes I think he does it just to entertain himself, and sometimes I think he does it as part of a sort of a team spirit that he has with, you know, to be a part of the Ron Paul team. Walter Block will say things. But Walter Block has done some very interesting intellectual work on the area of abortion. And he's pointed out that under a free market situation where the government is not involved at all, where there is no government or where the government is completely not involved in healthcare and or the abortion issue, Walter Block has shown that the free market can solve the abortion problem very simply, very easily, using scientific methods and the free market principles. The market can fix the abortion issue. And I'm not going to go into his whole thing on it. That's all available online. If you go, you could probably Google Walter Block abortion and come up with it. I'm not sure. But it's really not the point of today's podcast. But Walter Block has shown very clearly that there is an answer to the abortion issue. But no matter whether Walter Block comes up with the answer, or if Mitt Romney came up with the answer, or if Barack Obama came up with the answer, or if, you know, Ronald Reagan rose from the dead with the answer to the abortion issue, nothing is going to change on the abortion issue. Because the abortion issue is used as a hammer by the left to beat the right, and it's used as a hammer by the right to beat the left, and it's used as a tool to keep people voting in the two groups, in the two parties. That's the only thing the politicians care about using the abortion issue for. I don't care if you go back through all the years that abortion has been an issue, and you take out any particular Republican that's been elected to office, or any particular Democrat that's been elected to office, and you listen to all the empty rhetoric that they tell you about the abortion issue, all the positioning and all the stands that they take, you listen to all of it, and you tell me how is it that years go by and nothing significantly changes on the abortion issue, and yet these politicians are so compassionate, and they are so intense, and they are so they take such powerful positions on the abortion issue, and it never changes. We have years that go by where the Democrats are in control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and nothing changes on the abortion issue. And we have years that go by where Republicans are in charge of the House and the Senate and the presidency, and nothing changes on the abortion issue. And the reason why is because it's simply a tool the politicians use to beat their voters and make them come out and vote. Using fear tactics, they make the voters come out and vote for them on this topic. That's all it is. It's just a hammer. The market could solve the abortion issue almost immediately, almost overnight. And this is the same thing with things like pollution. The trash issue is one of my pet peeves. If we had a free market in trash collection right now, today, and if you could get the fascist economic mechanisms out of the trash industry in the United States, trash would again become a commodity as it once was. It would have a value rather than the socialist price distortions that affect the trash market today. Trash would have a value. People would actually pay you to come and pick up your trash, because without the market distortions, without the socialist market distortions, trash is a commodity and it has a value. And there would be recycling that takes place because there would be a market for it. They would literally, as they used to at one time, people would come around to your house and beg you for your trash because there was money in it. And this happens in other places in the world today. In Egypt today, there are whole under economies, if you can put it that way, that go around and almost steal trash in order to get it, take it down to its basic components, and recycle it. And that's what would happen today in the United States if it weren't for the socialist price distortions. And these same kind of things can echo into almost every issue that the politicians throw at us and use as scare tactics to beat the voters into coming out and vote. You have to vote for Al Gore, or else the oceans are going to rise and the whole world, everybody's going to die and everything's terrible. Well, Al Gore is buying a mansion right on the ocean shores. They know they're lying. They know exactly what they're doing. And you know what? Ron Paul knows exactly what he's doing, too. Now, you ready for the hard part of this podcast? Ron Paul has, to a certain extent, made it clear from the beginning that his purpose in running for the president is to shift the political discussion in the direction of liberty. He has said this over and over. He has never come out openly to the media and said that he didn't intend to be president. But if you really take off your blinders, and if you really open your eyes and you look at the political wording that Ron Paul uses when the media actually corners him and says, you know, it's clear you can't be elected. Why are you doing this? What is your motivation? What is your purpose? And you watch him, and you watch how he dances around the question in almost Bill Clinton-like wording that he uses. Because Ron Paul knows exactly what he is doing. Ron Paul is not being honest with his supporters. Now, many of his supporters know that Ron Paul has never intended to be president. Many of them have written this out in the open. But what is he trying to do then, if he's not trying to be president? Well, I have an accusation. He's trying to bring the Republican Party back to its position as the opposition to the progressive liberals. He's wanting to bring the party back to its Robert Taft-type roots from like the early 1900s, when Robert Taft held the Republican Party as the opposition to the progressives and to liberalism and to socialism. Now, I'm not just taking that out of, you know, some wild imagination that I've got in my mind. Ron Paul has said pretty much this exact same thing over and over. If you take the... I have to wait for this plane to go by. Hold on. Sorry about that, folks. One of the hazards of living right next to an airport. But Ron Paul has said these things over and over. He's used different wording to say them, but he said them over and over. Ron Paul wants to return the Republican Party to what he calls its conservative roots. Ron Paul almost never refers to himself as a libertarian. He almost always refers to himself as a conservative. And why is that? Because the direction that he's trying to push the Republican Party is towards conservatism, not libertarianism. He has made this very clear. He has said it over and over. He's trying to push the party back towards the party of Robert Taft, the way the Republicans were as the opposition to people like FDR and people like that. Now, to a certain extent, Rothbard, he's following Rothbard's lead in this. Rothbard very foolishly trusted the Taft Republicans back in the 40s and 50s. Rothbard honestly believed that using the Taft Republicans, or what he called the old right, using the Taft Republicans was an effective tool to keep the progressives in check, to keep the socialists in check. But the problem is, this has never worked. This plan of Ron Paul's that he has not really tried to hide. The only way that you can hear my voice and hear me saying these things and not believe what I'm saying is if you actually haven't listened to what Ron Paul has said. Because he's been saying these things in a political, in a Bill Clinton-like way. He's been saying them hidden, but yet obvious to a lot of people. He's been saying these things right along. He wants to move the Republican Party back towards the old right. And what do you get when you do that? You just get the older version of the left-right dichotomy. That's exactly what Rothbard attempted to use for years. That was the whole purpose in people like Rand supporting Goldwater during the 60s. That was the whole purpose of it. And it didn't work. It didn't work. Go all the way back to 1900 when the right started trying to resist the Teddy Roosevelt progressives. And they attempted this in 1900. It didn't work. It didn't work in 1913. When the right attempted to stop the progressive moves of getting central banking and all that. It didn't work in 1913. It didn't work in 1917 when the progressives drove the U.S. into World War I. It didn't work then. It didn't work in 1919 when the progressives brought the prohibition of alcohol in on us. It didn't work. The progressives pushed ahead, and the progressives won. And it didn't prevent this same method of using the old right, the Taft Republicans, to try to keep the progressives in check. It didn't work during the FDR administration in the 1930s. Roosevelt still was able to do all the socialist, all the fascist programs that he wanted to do in the 1930s. He did them in spite of the Taft Republicans. He did these things in their face, and they couldn't do anything about it except complain. This method has never worked in stopping progressives. Never. It didn't prevent Roosevelt from baiting Japan into a position where they had no choice but to attack Pearl Harbor. And then Roosevelt had his excuse to take us into war in World War II. These methods did not stop Roosevelt from doing these things. These methods did not stop massive amounts of U.S. aid, U.S. taxpayer money, from going to prop up the Soviet Union. All the time, these same Republicans and these same Democrats used the Cold War to scare Americans with, well, American money held up the Soviet Union and kept them functioning as our propped up enemy to be feared. All that time, American money propping up the Soviet Union. The Taft Republicans did not stop this. They did not stop the progressives. Everything that happened during the Reagan Revolution in the 80s did not stop the progressives. As a matter of fact, it empowered them and brought them into the Republican Party and destroyed any remnants that were left of the Taft Republicans. Now, this method that Ron Paul is using right now, and that Rothbard, if you listen to my podcast on a regular basis, you know that I credit Rothbard as being one of the great thinkers of our movement and one of the great thinkers of the 20th century. I have learned a tremendous amount from Rothbard, but that doesn't mean everything he said and did was correct. And Ron Paul is taking this method, this whole process, he's taking it right out. Ron Paul is taking this right out of Rothbard's playbook, and it didn't work for Rothbard. It failed and backfired on him on numerous occasions, including when he attempted to use the same methods to set up the Cato Institute by going in and marrying in with the enemy, and then expecting the enemy to be on your side. No, it won't work. It's never worked before, and it will never work. Compromising to try to use the political means to accomplish libertarian goals has never worked because it can't work. It's against the principles of libertarianism. So that's my rant, and that's my accusation against Ron Paul. Ron Paul has not been openly honest with his followers. He has said these things, but he has allowed others to say other things that have hyped up his followers. Now, what can I compare it to? Let's compare it to a car salesman. Let's say there's a used car salesman, and he's got a car on his lot, and you're interested in that car, and you're looking at the car, and the used car salesman tells you, oh, you're going to love this car, you're going to love this car, a great price, look at the price there. Where are you going to ever find this car with this kind of a price? And you're looking at it, and you're thinking, boy, this is a really good price. And so you say to the guy, is there anything wrong with this car that I should know about? And the car salesman says, we go through all of our cars, and we give a very high level of service to them, and we check them out, and we make sure that all of our cars are up to our standards. And you're like, oh, well, that's pretty good. No, it's not. He didn't say anything. He didn't answer your question. He laid out something for you. He said everything he said was actually the truth. But he allowed you, in his wording, he allowed you to believe something he didn't say. So what you don't know is that the car was in a flood and was underwater for 3 weeks. And who knows what the electronics are going to be like in it. And yes, they cleaned it up and changed some parts. But it's being sold to you with no warranty. And he's not being honest to you about its condition. Yes, they went through it and looked it all over. And it runs. But he's not telling you that it was underwater. And that's what's happening with Ron Paul. Ron Paul is not openly lying, but he's allowing other people to say things about the direction he intends to take his movement. He's allowing other people to say things that are not true. And he himself is allowing his followers to believe something that he knows is not the facts. Ron Paul is going to go into the convention this fall. And he's going to have a lot of delegates, and he's going to use his muscle in the Republican Party to shift the direction of the Republican Party the way that he wants it to go, towards a liberty platform. But even if he can accomplish everything that he has openly said that he's going to do, all he has really done is return the Republican Party to the Robert Taft-style Republican Party that was ineffective in stopping the progressives for half a century. That's what he's going to do if he can do everything that he was going to do. A false Ron Paul will be offered to you. I've said this before. A false Ron Paul will be offered to you. It might be his son as a vice president. It might be somebody else. It might be, I don't know. It might be somebody else in the liberty movement offered as a vice presidential running mate to Romney, and a lot of empty promises will be made, and Ron Paul will step out, and a huge amount of new, if I can use this term, new Republicans or Ron Paul Republicans are going to take power throughout the party, and they're going to shift the Republican Party into the vision that Ron Paul has, and it will work. Everything that Ron Paul is trying to do is going to work. And it's going to make the Republican Party stronger than it's been in 50 years. And it is the exact opposite of libertarian purposes. And it is the exact opposite of driving towards liberty. Because all you've done is you've created a Republican Party that's more powerful and more efficient. And if they can get control of government, which I don't think Romney can beat Obama. I think Obama's going to win, but even if things come up and things happen, like the birth issue or whatever, if things happen, allow the Republicans to regain the presidency, whether in 2012 or in 2016, it doesn't matter. When this happens and these new Ron Paul Republicans are in control of the government, it is still going to be a government based on aggression. They are still going to rob you. They may rob you slightly less. They may invade less countries. They may have less aggression on our borders, and they may molest you a little bit less at the airport. But it's still going to be a government based on aggression. It's still going to be the state. If everything Ron Paul has promised happens, all you're going to have is a really efficient state. And then the pendulum will swing. And the Ron Paul folks will lose control, and the progressives will take it back. And then you're going to see something that you cannot imagine. And that's how politics works. I'm going to break for the commercial. I'll be back in 2 minutes. How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch, because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from BadQuaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help BadQuaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support BadQuaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do you do? Well, you go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from BadQuaker.com. Thanks, folks. Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial break and coming back to maybe a little bit lighter podcast, as I was getting a little tense in the first half. So it's just really frustrating because there's so many people that are so dedicated to the Ron Paul movement. And they believe so much. And to watch them with all their enthusiasm and to know that they're being conned by a politician. Now, I know that's going to be horribly offensive to some Ron Paul followers, but it's what's happening. You're being conned by a politician. He's not going to do what you think he's going to do, and he's made that clear to people. But there is an answer to this. The answer is not in getting government to fix government. It's not in trusting the presidency to fix what the government has done. The answer is not in going back and having faith in the state to fix the state. That's not the answer. The answer, I go over it so often in this podcast that I think, Is there anyone really listening to this? And I know there is. I know I have good listeners. But I'm thinking beyond those listeners that actually get what I'm saying. Out there, the people who have dedicated, money that they couldn't afford, they've sent to Ron Paul, believing what he was saying and believing what those that surround him are saying. Money that they couldn't afford. Money they could use to get out of debt. Money they could use to help educate their children. Money they could use to educate themselves. And that money went to Ron Paul's campaign. And one last thing, you say, well, Ron Paul did a lot for liberty. Well, the increase in tyranny drives people towards liberty. I've said this before about the lack of oxygen. You walk around every day and you don't think about breathing air. You don't think about it at all. It just happens. You don't think about air at all until something happens that you can't get air. Ask anyone who suffers from asthma. Ask anyone who's ever been in an emergency situation where you're choking. You don't think about air until you don't have enough of it. And then it becomes the most important thing in the world. And liberty is exactly like that. If you have all the liberty you need, you don't think about liberty. And if you have enough liberty to be comfortable, you don't think about liberty. But when you start taking liberty away, then you start to see the value of liberty. And this is what's happened. It's been happening at a somewhat accelerated pace since about 1970. But it got much faster about 1980. And it got much faster. This loss of liberty got much faster about 1990. And it got dramatically faster around 2000. And then in 2001, the acceleration of the loss of liberty was almost stunning. And the growth of the liberty movement directly coincided that growth of Leviathan. As the government became more and more oppressive, the desire for liberty began to explode. Ron Paul happened to be there, standing there, saying the right things with the right books available. But Ron Paul didn't make this movement. The existence of tyranny made people realize how important liberty is. And when Ron Paul is long gone, and when the tyranny dramatically increases, liberty will follow suit. The market will demand liberty. And as the market demands liberty, the state cannot resist the desires of the market. So again, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? We teach. We teach each other. We teach the youth. We work. We spread the ideas of liberty. We spread the ideas of Rothbard. We spread the ideas of Mises and Thoreau and all the others. We do this. And we work towards a free market. We work towards an underground market that is not connected or controlled in any way by the state. And as we do these two things, tyranny increases. And every time tyranny increases, our position is better and better and better because more people see the state for what it really is. And at the point of where it's not a majority. This is not a democratic thing. There's not going to be a vote. But at the point of where the market decides, the state is no longer desirable for the market. At that point, the state will cease to be. Waiting for the state to make that decision can be a little frustrating. But realize this. When the market decided that AOL wasn't cutting it as a way to get access to the internet, when the market decided that, there was nothing AOL could do about it. And AOL just shifted off into, it became meaningless. And the same is the case with anything in the marketplace. And remember, the state is just an aspect. The state, everything that the state provides, or everything that people think the state provides for them, everything that comes from government that they accredit to the blessings of the state, all those things are actually provided to them by the market. And the state is only an interference in that process. I've talked about that extensively before. And when the time comes that the market decides that the state is no longer relevant, it'll become like VHS tapes, or like Betamax tapes, or like, anything else. It will go away. And it will be replaced by what the market wants. And the only way the market can really want liberty is to see what tyranny is truly like. So that's what we're going to see. Okay, let me see if I can fit this in now about Mises and the Master Builder. Because that's really what I wanted to talk about today. I'm first gonna read the Master Builder story. And then I'm going to tell you why. And I'm going contrary to my notes because I was going to go the other direction, but I'm going to read the story of the Master Builder here. Imagine a Master Builder. He has at his disposal the labor of many workers, as well as a collection of bricks, shingles, planes of glass, planes of glass, and so on. Mises then asks us to suppose that a subordinate in charge of counting the available supplies inflates the number of bricks by 10%. Thus, the master builder draws up the blueprint for the house, erroneously believing he has more bricks than he actually has. Because of this error, he embarks on a building plan that is unsustainable. There are simply not enough bricks to finish the house as it's designed. This is how bubbles are created in the market. False signals are fed to decision makers, and they act based on those signals. Okay, now, that's basically the story of the Master Builder. I trimmed it down a little bit to try to get it into the podcast, but that's basically the story of the Master Builder. Now, right now, the interest rates for some projects in the United States, the interest rates on taking out a loan for some projects are actually below 0%. That means you can literally make money by taking out a loan on some projects. These incentives have been created without a supporting market demand. These false signals are fed to decision makers, and there are tax advantages to taking out these loans and to starting new building projects. And so a person can actually, if you understand how this process works, you can take out a loan for what is in effect below zero interest rates, so you can literally make money by taking out a loan, and then you get these tax advantages to starting this building project. And then if you're the wise investor, you can dump this whole process and leave the building project and run off with the profits out of it and do it entirely legally. Now, the result of this is what you might call the other side of the equation. Resources that could have been used wisely, that could have been expended into a variety of different ways in the market that would have actually produced something that the market wanted. Resources that could have been used wisely are wasted on projects that are propped up with these false signals. It's very much like Mises's building of the house. The decision maker thinks things are a certain way, and so he makes plans and he makes decisions and he spends money and he uses effort to go in the direction of that, but he doesn't know that he doesn't have the foundational the basic things needed to complete his project. Well, in a commercial building project, that doesn't necessarily mean bricks. It can mean any variety of things that are going to keep the project from reaching its completion. And reaching its completion is not just the finishing of the construction. It's actually getting a business in there, in that building, and functioning and paying off, making the construction construction program actually pay for itself. All those things together mean the completion of the project. And in the early stages of this, if the signals that you're given are false, then whether or not you get to the end where the project actually pays for itself is questionable. Some people can pull their money out early and make a profit off of it because of these false signals. But somebody's going to get stuck. In the end, you've created a bubble, and somebody's going to get stuck when it pops. Now, right now, the commercial real estate market is in the midst of a bubble, and it has not yet popped. It's bigger than the bubble than the housing bubble we saw in 2006 to 2008. A lot of people have talked about hyperinflation. This ride is not over. Hyperinflation is generally considered 50% inflation or more per month, but these are just magic numbers and they mean nothing. This inflation is a hidden tax that's used by despotic governments so that they can continue their spending beyond what taxation will allow. And so they're going to continue with inflation because it's a way they can tax you without you obviously seeing it. And this commercial bubble at some point in time is going to give way. It's going to pop. And when it does, it's going to be uglier than the 2008 bubble. Now, it would be better. Now, anybody who knows me knows that I say over and over, taxation is theft. Taxation is bad. Sure, stealing from me 10% is better than stealing from me 80%. But stealing from me is stealing from me either way. I don't feel good about it no matter what. But when you compare a regular tax that's out in the open, like an income tax or a sales tax or anything else, if you compare a regular tax to the kind of hidden tax that that inflation is, then actually an open tax, a clear tax that people can see would be better, because at least you know you're being robbed. You can see it. You can watch it leave your paycheck. But when they tax us with inflation, and it doesn't have to be, you know, what they classify as hyperinflation, over 50% per month. It doesn't have to be that level of inflation. But when they're taxing us with inflation, they're taxing us quietly and in secret. And it's far more hideous and far more painful than when they do it out in the open. Because when they do it in the open, the general public sees it and they demand something be done about it. So now let me back up and tell you the two stories that caused me to talk about this. In the area of Ohio where I live, between Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio, there is an area called the Austin Landing. It's an area where Interstate 75 and State Highway 741 are dissected by... Dissected? Is that the right? No. There's a crossroad that cuts through Highway 75 and Highway 741 that's called... Austin Pike. And Austin Pike, they have connected it into with lane connections. They've connected it into 741 and into Interstate 75. And right in that area, there is a huge burst of commercial buildings that's taking place. And all of this is basically stimulus, you know, supported tax money and false signals given to builders to go in and create this huge industrial area where millions and millions of dollars are being spent to build all these new commercial buildings right in this area that's called Austin Landing. And the problem is, there is, if you look around the community, the amount of unemployment that's going on, the fact that major employers, literally within a couple of blocks of this location, major employers are in the process of cutting back and laying people off. The huge employers in the Dayton area are either closing down or massively laying off and pulling back. There is absolutely no industry to support the kind of growth that we're seeing in the Austin Landing area. In addition to everything I've said about Austin Landing, the road 741, State Highway 741, that goes from a nearby State Highway 71 up to the Austin Landing, up to Austin Pike, it's about 4 miles or so, and almost all of it is less than 2 years old. They rebuilt the whole thing about 2 years ago. So all the pavement is good, and it's all a good wide, it's like four lanes with a wide central divider and wide side lanes on each side. So really we're talking about, you know, effectively we're talking about like eight lanes here, if you look at it that way. But anyway, all good roads, and they're coming in, and they're grinding all 4 miles of this. All 4 miles of good pavement, they're grinding it down and replacing all the pavement for the whole 4 miles leading to Austin Pike. Now, why would they grind up perfectly good streets, perfectly good highway? Why would they grind up a perfectly good highway and repave it? And it's because these people actually believe what Bastiat was trying to say, that you can't improve the economy by smashing windows. You can't improve the economy by digging a ditch and then digging another ditch and using the dirt from that ditch to fill in the previous ditch. These things don't work. They have never worked and they cannot work. And yet that's what's happening. Massive amounts of tax money, millions and millions of dollars, are being poured into this little 4 mile section to prop up, to give false signals to decision makers that are going out on a limb to build this industrial area, this commercial, I should say commercial, not industrial, this huge commercial area to build it up and put buildings in there and try to lure investors into it. And it's all a bubble. Now, here's the thing. Everything I've said is happening locally right here where I live. But this is happening all across the country with commercial building. And very few people are talking about it. Massive amounts of money are going into road programs to fix roads that don't need to be fixed. Or to fix roads that just don't have the, you know, the, who knows really what it is? Because once you get, it's like I was talking about with the garbage, trash collection. Once you get market distortions into the picture, you have no idea what the real market is really going to do in that situation. Because the market distortions give false signals to all the decision makers. So who knows what streets need to be repaved and who knows what streets really should be replaced or rebuilt or whatever. With massive amounts of government money, tax money, stolen money, is propping up these programs like this. All it's doing is creating a bigger and a bigger and a bigger bubble. And this is what's coming at us. The commercial bubble is coming at us, and it is bigger than the housing bubble. And it's not going to affect the same companies to a certain extent, although some of them will be, but it's going to hit companies that could not have been imagined in 2008. This is not going to be pretty, folks. I don't know if I have, let me see how much time I have left. Ooh, I don't have enough time. I was going to talk about the gold market as well. There's a huge demand in Russia right now for gold for the purpose of jewelry. Up 28% compared to the same time last year. And Russia's not even the biggest consumer of jewelry gold. That would be China. China is exploding in the growth market for consumer jewelry gold. This is going into those markets. These are former, technically, they're former communist nations. Now they're, both of them are moving very rapidly towards fascism. And the thing about fascism is, in its early stages, it works better than communism. We in the United States are in the latter stages of fascism. We've had it for 100 years now, and it's starting to run its course, and it's getting ready to collapse. But in the Russia, the former Soviet Union, and in China, fascism is young enough that it's still working. At least in false senses, it's working to prop up their economies. So we see all this growth in the gold jewelry markets in Russia and China. And the echo of this is going to hit the gold markets eventually. I'm not going to go into that any further today because I'm running out of time, but I will try to get to a piece on that in the future. Folks, don't take what I'm saying about Ron Paul in a harsh way. Take it as a voice of somebody crying out, saying, open your eyes, see what's happening. There's a better direction than what Ron Paul is offering. For more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com. That's why we're very upset about freedomfiends.cz. Freedomfiends.cz is a Liberty Media archive of Freedom Fiends material. Hosted in the Czech Republic, freedomfiends.cz is outside the jurisdiction of the Watchers, who employ me, the Central Scrutinizer, to keep you from hearing things that might make you think. My fellow scrutinizers and I do not want you to visit freedomfiends.cz. Do not visit freedomfiends.cz.